This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. Hello and welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. This is your Vegas golf coach here, Gaylord Rhodes. And in this episode, I'm going to bring back one of my original guests, Mike Guillen. And Mike is an author who wrote a book. And his first book was titled Professional Golf for the Rest of Us. And it was a true story of Mike's journey trying to make it out on the professional level as a golfer through the mini tours, thinking, you know, we all have dreams. I mean, I believed in it too. And it's a story of how Mike was chasing his dream and unfortunately blew his knee out and had to retire from his dream of making it out on the tour, and ended up writing a book about it to help and just to kind of showcase the journey and kind of give, you know, some people an idea of what it really takes to make it out on tour. And so he published that book last year. We did our first story. And since then, he's published another book. And this book was I would call it probably a fiction book, but it was called The Ultimate Guide to Playing Money Golf. And, you know, obviously, as Mike was out there hustling and playing money games and trying to, you know, fund his way out on the tour, we do a little bit of gambling on the golf course. And he's chronicling in this book. And I can't wait to hear what he had, you know, some of the stories in that book. And he's going to talk a little bit about that. And then he's working on his third book. This is actually a fiction book titled Stitch, A Golf Story. And I'm happy to have Mike back, and I'm excited to hear his stories and let him showcase kind of what's going on in the world of his book writing. And so, Mike Guillen, how are you? And welcome, and glad to have you back, Mike.
Hey, Gaylord, I'm doing great. So good to be back. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing terrific, man. I can't wait to hear about your two new books that you're working on. Tell us how all this evolved and what you're up to.
Been up to a lot lately. I moved back home to Phoenix earlier this year to help a friend with his professional career. In that time, I've actually made quite a few edits to Professional Golf for the Rest of Us. And a lot of that had to do with our first interview. One of the things that we talked about was in the equipment section, where you had actually mentioned that players should have their clubs custom fit. And that was something that I completely forgot in the first edition. And I'm happy to say that that is now in the updated edition. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
after that, I haven't done too much with it yet. Now that we're getting into the next season here in Phoenix, which is a very big hotbed for professional golf, and there's still plenty of stores around here. Hopefully now that I have my three books that I've now completed, two of them published, one of them about to be published, I can probably start focusing more on the marketing side. The most recent book that I published, which was in August, was The Ultimate Guide to Playing Money Golf. And I thought that one was most apt for your show, being the Vegas golf coach. Also basically ties in my passion for golf as well as my background in gambling.
Yes, and you know, I mean, needless to say, when you were out there chasing the mini tours before your injury, there was a lot of hustling going on. Just that's how we paid the bills.
Oh yeah, yeah, there was, and that's one of the things I talk about a lot. I mean, I've yet to write, and I don't think I'll ever write a book on how to play golf or how to play the golf swing. One thing I remember that we talked about in your studio about 3 months before I moved was, you know, how basic the technical aspects of the golf swing really are. It's just a lot of repetition. But the other components of actually playing the game are just things that you pick up or you learn from others. And gambling in golf is really one thing that I think it's misunderstood a lot. Something that has been around forever doesn't get quite as much of attention as it probably should. In fact, you know, some of the greatest players of our time, of all time, were hustlers. Raymond Floyd, Lee Trevino. I read a book recently about Titanic Thompson.
Yes.
And how he was kind of the spearhead of the Trevino-Floyd match.
Yep.
Out there in El Paso. And I figured I would be able to take my two, not just in golf, but I have a background in playing poker semi-professionally. It's something I started doing after I was recovering from knee surgery. And so this was a book that really just gets into some of the real basics of finding games where you're not only having fun, but you're able to turn a profit, how to understand that you're not always going to win, and how always trying to win and always trying to get an edge is a surefire way to make sure you never get, you know, one of the big keys that I really felt that was important to this book was if you're someone that complains a lot, or if you're someone that always has to win, always has to take the good side of it, the only people that are going to want to play with you are the ones that are going to have every edge against you.
Yes. Yeah, you know, we've all gambled in golf, and it's just kind of what keeps you focused in a lot of ways. I mean, once I realized I wasn't going to make it on the tour and became a teacher full-time, which I have a passion for, I always look for action on the golf course. I mean, just even if it's just with some of your students, you know, you want to put a little pressure on it. It gives them a little added focus. It gives them something to kind of stimulate their ability to focus. And I think in many ways, you know, it would be hard for me to go out and just, I love to go out and just play by myself and work on my game. But when there's other people out there, man, there's always got to be some action going on. And so tell me about this book. So what kind of, I mean, what are the chapters like? I mean, do you go into the actual games or into this more in the psychology of gambling and golf?
For a short book, it's only, I believe the paperback version is only in the 50 some pages mm-hmm. realm, but I've always tried to make sure my books are very concise, especially in nonfiction. My books are very concise.
Right.
The start of it is talking about my beginnings as a gambler, which started very young. My mom was a gambler. She actually worked at a horse track in Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I was about 6 or 7, and she would take me out on Saturdays when she was off. Her and my stepdad would go out there and they let me pick horses and try to guide me on what to look for. And it just slowly evolved from there to playing marbles for keeps in the schoolyards of Fairview Elementary School, and eventually worked its way up. And it starts off with that, and then we get into how to manage a bankroll, how to make sure that you're not overextending yourself on the golf course, especially on the golf course.
Right.
There's not a real science to it, but I strongly advise anyone that plays golf for money to have a set amount that you're willing to bet and only be willing to risk about 10% of that total worth, because you do have variance. You do have days where you're going to play okay and your opponent's going to play slightly better. There are going to be days where you play great and your opponent's slightly play even just slightly better. So you have to be able to, but in the long run, if you have a decided skill advantage, you're going to win in the long run. And it's always about preparing and being aware of the long run and not just taking your entire net worth and dumping it into dumping it into one match or one Nassau. And then after that, it gets into the various games, starting with low variance, just, you know, straight bet matches. The difference between playing match play and stroke play, when you want to play stroke play, when you want to play match play. Then you start getting into the really high games like bridge. Have you played much bridge?
No, not much. You know, we play, I play a pretty standard game. But I agree with you on the fact that you need to budget your bankroll. So I set aside how much I'm willing to lose for the month. And I know that I'm going to play 4 particular games every month, typically. And so I take that budget and divide it by 4. And then I have another budget just for the little games I play around during the week, which are very minor, just little simple things like a couple beers or maybe a dollar Nassau. But in the big games, you know, I've got a bankroll, and interesting enough, you know, and I take it down in four pieces, and that's all I'll risk a quarter every time I play in those games. And the goal is to end up ahead of the game at the end of the month. And so far I've been pretty good at it, but you know, you're going to have some days where you just get your butt kicked, and you got to be prepared for those. And you know, that you have a backup for the next game, so you're not out cold. And so I like that concept you do. We play skins, we play net and gross, we play front back total, we play net, we play gross, we have some side games that we play. We play a little wolf sometimes as a side game just to keep it interesting. But the main game, you know, is typically going to be a $50 to $200 buy-in, and you just have to choose your poison and bank and quarter your bankroll, because I only play in four big games a month. You know, it gets a little bit, you know, because my bankroll is the same. And so if I'm playing 10 times, my buy-in's less. And so I prefer to quarter it out and try to go for bigger money. I mean, I can win $500, $600, $800 versus winning, you know, $50 on a $20 buy-in.
Yeah, you definitely want to, and that's another thing I talk about is variance, something that's very misunderstood in all gambling. You know, coming from a background in playing poker, you can have, especially in no-limit games and games where you can play your best and you can lose six or seven buy-ins, and especially online, you can lose six or seven buy-ins in an hour or two. So it's always important to understand that, you know, luck does play. And the one disadvantage, I guess you could say, in golf is that where in other forms of gambling, you have essentially an infinite number of not necessarily infinite, but you can only play so many holes in a day. Whereas if you're playing poker or if you're, you know, betting sports, you know, you have a lot more options in one day to kind of spread your money out. So it's very important. You don't have to be as careful in golf, but you still want to make sure that you're paying attention to your profits and losses. And it lets you know if you're playing games that, you know, you maybe are maybe too soft or maybe not soft enough. And so it gets this a lot of different tips, things that I've picked up on, how I handle big moments. You know, talks about the time where I first felt those nerves where I had a two footer for birdie. It's a really cool game, actually. It was a 9-hole skins game, all gross. And what was interesting is because the head pro was actually running the game, we all played together. So here we are on a Saturday afternoon with a nine-some.
Yep.
The ninesome, yeah, all out there. And on the second hole, it's this blind shot par four, and I rip a 3-wood to about, you know, 3 feet off the green, 20 feet from the hole, and somehow, you know, and I was nowhere near the best player in the game, but somehow, you know, just, and there's that luck that's involved. There's a couple of former tour guys in that game, a few other scratch players, and I just somehow faded everybody, and I still remember that I could barely breathe on that 2-footer I had to win my first skin. And it makes it so much more intense when you know that you don't, it's not like your typical skins game, especially if you play the one that, like, Las Vegas Golf Club, where you've got seven groups you got to wait for to find out if your eagle or birdie is good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know right then and there that if it's going to be good or not. So
yeah, that's impressive. Yep.
And so, I mean, I was lucky enough to make it, and it was me and one other guy. We cleaned it up pretty good, but
yeah. Those are fun games.
I mean, being able to stay in the moment, stay focused, and not care about the result. I mean, it's probably the biggest thing that anyone could ever do is think about the consequences of a great shot or even the consequences of a bad shot. It's just you just have to stand up there and hit it.
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, it's interesting that you know, we do. I mean, when I talk about dividing my you know, monthly, there's always the extra $20 I do in the group skins game where you can keep an eye on everything. And sometimes there's more pressure in the group than there is, because you have no idea what's going on in the big game until you get in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might eagle the ninth hole and you got rabbits running but you never know who's going to cut you and what's going to happen. But in that internal game that you're playing with the four guys or five guys in your group, that's where a lot of times pressure can build up. And I have a hard time sometimes realizing, you know what, this putt may mean a lot right this moment, but in the big scheme of game, in the big game where the big money is, it may not be that important. So I always use that as a kind of a psychological way to calm down and walk up and just drain it and not worry about the $2 Nassau I'm playing individually.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's fun though. I can't imagine ever playing golf just for fun.
No.
It does nothing for me.
No.
And you know, if I can't play, and you know, even now, like I'm fairly busy with a lot of things, but and you know, I'll play, you know, the 9-hole executive course near downtown Phoenix once a week just to kind of keep my skills sharp. But I'm waiting to I can really put the time in so I can. There's a lot of big games here, and they're not easy.
Welcome to Vegas, baby. There's a lot of games here too. You know, it's interesting. Oh, yeah. Because you know, we get out and we play these games, and I just feel like, you know, there's always got to be some action. I agree with you. And you know, and you think about the tour during the week, during the practice rounds, these guys are betting, you know, because unless they're just working on the course and putting from all over the place, when they're actually playing practice rounds or playing at their home course back with the guys, there's always action on the course. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And that's what keeps you focused. Otherwise, you know, making 4 or 5 birdies, it may not happen. You're just not focused on anything. So there's always, you know, the action keeps your interest and keeps it going. So,
yeah.
You know, when they're out in the actual tour, the money's so big, there's tons of pressure. And, you know, your whole lifeline's on stake. I mean, your mortgage, everything. And so it's interesting that you wrote the book. I kind of thumbed through it and I looked at the chapters and I read a couple of them. And it's a great book. And I would really highly recommend my audience that plays golf and plays for a little money. It's a good read and it's a quick read. And so, Mike, how do they get that book? Is it downloadable on Amazon or how are you publishing it?
Okay. All of my work is going to be available on Amazon. You can get the so I have a total of 6 books, and we're going to get to the really good one here shortly. But I have my Amazon author page. It's Amazon.com/author/Mike Guillen. And
spell your name, Mike, books, because it's a little bit unusual. Guillen's a little bit unusual.
Guillen.
Yep.
Usually baseball fans are really the only ones that ever recognize
Guillen.
You know, Ozzie Guillen. And so go to my website, or you can also find the links through my social media, which I'll probably share at the end of the show.
Okay.
And I have, so the 3 main books, the first one that we've talked about, and then The Ultimate Guide to Playing Money Golf, those are available in both Kindle and paperback copies. And you can order one there, or you can either order the paperback and have it sent directly to your home, or you can have it downloaded right onto your smartphone. The Kindle, you don't need to have an Amazon Kindle to read these things. All you need is the app and some kind of smartphone, tablet,
right,
computer, anything that has an operating system, really. And it's one of my. It was a short book. It was something I wrote in between, just to kind of give my nonfiction brain something to work on while I was finishing up the novel. But I think people that are not sure of what to expect when they play for money, really it's just about looking for situations where you at least have a chance to win money and have fun, because if you're trying to, you know, make your mortgage out there and you're not used to it, you should probably look for something else.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to, you know, start small, get a feel for it and work your way up. And I know for sure, I know for certain, you know, a couple of guys in Vegas, mostly, they play big and they get to play against some players that probably are a little overextended or just have plenty of money or they're willing to blow, but there's a certain code you got to abide by. And hopefully I didn't give away too many secrets, but just enough for people to understand, you know, what makes players want to play you for money, even if you know you have the best of it.
Right.
There's certain things that you just can and cannot do.
Right. No, I think it's a good read, and I've had a chance to thumb through it a little bit, so in prep for the show. So tell us about this nonfiction book you're writing.
So the fiction book is something that I thought about doing for a very long time. I probably ripped through 5 introductory chapters about 4 times, and every single one of them just hit the trash, and then finally to build it up. I've been writing now probably for about 8 or 9 years, nothing too serious, you know, blogs and, you know, just trying out different stuff and kind of getting a feel for my voice, and but it's all been nonfiction, you know, my memoir type stuff. Even my nonfiction books, there's a lot of personal details. But there was never, I've always wanted to see if I could test my creative ability and apply it to golf. And while that may not seem like a very big jump, one thing that a lot of people will realize when they are, who understand golf, is that playing golf is very fun, or at least can be very fun. Watching golf can be fun for some, for others it can be a little boring. But reading about golf is not something that you hear a whole lot about. It's not a subject that can really grasp on, unless there's a good story. And you think about some of it's hard to think of, you know, more than 3 or 4 really good golf fiction books. Missing Links and Shanks for Nothing by Rick Riley. Very funny reads. Then there's, you know, Golf in the Kingdom.
Yes.
But you really can't think of. And then there was one about, the 7 Days in Utopia book, I believe.
Yes. Yes. I actually have kind of run across some of the guys involved in that book. It was an amazing story, how they wrote it.
Yes. So, I mean, there's, you know, when you compare it to other sports, you know, there have been plenty of other ones. So I wanted to have something that other people could relate to. And so Stitch is, it's a story about a young man. He's kind of at that coming of age area of his life. He's 17, lost both his parents at a young age, and found himself, you know, throwing himself into golf, and so much so that he actually ends up living at the golf course. He's got himself his own little setup in a house in the maintenance yard, and works there, practices there, plays there, but mostly keeps to himself. One of the reasons that this story has seemed very interesting to me is because there's some of it that's very autobiographical. I lost my parents at a fairly young age, and golf was my safe haven. It was what I threw myself into. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about grades. I didn't care about a social life. I didn't care about friends. I just wanted to be at the golf course and practice and practice and practice. And so while that was very good for me from a professional standpoint, I can definitely look back on my life and my teenage years and see that it helped me back in a lot of ways. And so this story is a way for other people who may have had similar issues or had certain kind of feelings during their adolescent years, something that they can relate to. There's very little golf in this book. It's about 55,000 words, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 are dedicated to actually commentating or narrating through golf. I think there's, I don't know, 5 rounds of golf played through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really about this central character and how he goes from just a very, very quiet, tense loner to someone that be more than that while he pursues his dream.
And very so that interesting. Was, I've got a lot of admiration for you to be able to write. I mean, I've always been a storyteller. To be able to write books like you do is a talent. And I know, because I've thought about writing in the past, and it just takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And kudos to you for getting these 3 books. And I know this book finished?
It's finished. It's going through its last round of edits. I took a very, you know, when it comes to writing, so a few things that I've learned from this process, especially with a novel, is that writing fiction and writing nonfiction, for me at least, are 2 very different things.
Yes.
Nonfiction, my nonfiction books, I had no problems piecing together, figuring out what I wanted to. And the one way I got over the hump of being able to write fiction is I took sort of a nonfiction approach to it. I plotted it out in a way. I kind of had like an idea of what I wrote down, what I thought would be the beginning, middle, and end. And the finished product from what my very first outline I wrote in September 2016, completely different from what the end product has become. There's also a couple analogies that I've really kind of gained from both my ability as a writer and how it can be applied to golf. And one of those things that comes in the fact of knowing what you're good at and not trying to piecemeal something that you're not good at. So in the instance of, and you look at some of the best players in the world, a lot of them are very good, very, very good at one or two specific things.
Yes.
And they're decent at the rest. Now, when it comes to writing, especially when it comes to writing fiction, I seem to have a knack for character building, and I seem to have a knack for bringing those characters to life through their dialogue. I have a slight background in theater, and one of the things that came from that was learning how to use dialogue to promote a message, as well as understanding who the characters are. Now, the things that I'm not good at are things like metaphors and similes and language. And I think where a lot of people get in trouble, both in writing and in golf, is that they try to do things that are outside of their strengths, rather than just sticking to your strengths and letting the rest of it come to you. You don't have to hit it like Dustin Johnson off the tee to be able to score. You don't have to hit wedges like Zach Johnson to be able to score. You know, those are two completely different players, but they both have incredible resumes.
Right.
And
I agree.
And it's not because they try to do everything great. They try to do, they focus on their strengths, and they let those strengths shine, and everything else just has to be good.
So you're in Phoenix now. I know you were in Vegas when we first met, and I kind of stumbled on your first book, and that's how we met. So you said, why don't you let us know how to find you on social media? I know you've got these three books, but you mentioned you had three other books.
Well, the other three books are kind of, they're more like brochures.
Gotcha.
Or how they call them, anything. The first one I wrote, which if anyone goes to my author page, you're going to see three books. You're going to see three little 99-cent books. There's one that's called Five Things You Can Do to Make Your Next Round of Golf Better. It's the longest drawn-out title, and that's ironic, and I'll get to that in a second. The second one is the player series, advanced series, Getting Out of the Rut. And the third one was Practice Putting Games. And the latter two, advanced series, or the player series and practice putting games, have golf titles on them. One of them is a guy that's kind of posing like Tiger. There's a ball shooting away. And then the other cover, just a ball falling in the hole. And then this other one with this long title, no golf aesthetics at all. It's just one of the Kindle ones. I've sold about 10 times amount of the copies of just that book than the last two combined, easily. One of the great things about writing these little small books, I think the longest one is the first one, and it's maybe 6.5-7 pages, is that it gives me an idea of what the consumer is looking for when it comes to writing, when it comes to golf instruction.
Right.
Because they're not really, you know, the five things you can do, it's real basic stuff, like making sure that you show up early enough, which I know might seem obvious, but someone that's worked in player services for a very long time, so many groups show up 7 minutes before their tee time. They go inside, they pay, they have their cards loaded up, and they go. And it's not very conducive to playing good golf.
And I can relate to player services. I've not only worked in them, but I've managed in and run the player services departments at golf courses, at Angel Park in particular, for 4 years when it first opened. And, yeah, you see a lot of crazy stuff.
You know, so there's a lot of things that I don't – and there's a reason – and the big reason why I write these things is also just to not only just keep the ideas flowing, especially the putting games one, I'm really disappointed because I may have only sold two or three copies of it, but there's really they're games that have been developed between myself and my friends that are just really good. I mean, the graphics aren't great. I use paint for them, but they're just things that just ways to get an idea of what people are really looking for when it comes to golf instruction, and not really just like golf, because I haven't written a single technical thing in my life other than like ghost written how-to articles, mm-hmm. which aren't very much fun. And it's something we talked about in the studio. I believe in it so much. I even put it because Thomas, who's the protagonist in the novel, teaches clinics similar to the way I did when I was about his age. I was about 21 when I started teaching him. You know, bump and run. You practice the button, bump and run until you can do it blindfold.
Right.
Like if you can do that little move, then that takes care of 80% of the troubles, the issues that you're going to have when it comes to understanding the golf swing.
Right.
So there's a lot of technical stuff, but I keep it, my own philosophy is very, very simple. And you see, you go out there and you look at even people that try to practice their short game a lot. It's very rare to see someone that has those attributes down pat. So what I like to look for are the things that people don't really pay attention to, you know, the things like putting. You know, when you think of short putts, you know, being able to make 8 balls in a circle in less than 30 seconds, it's a very valuable skill because you don't want to, we've all been there, you have that 3-footer and you think it's easy, and then you start overthinking it and thinking about all the ways you can mess this up and look silly, and you know, those are things that a lot of people don't think about, and just ways to take your mind out of it. The lag putting one is probably my favorite, where you take 3 balls and you put them as close as you can to the hole, and unless you make all 3 of them, the 3 balls go to where the farthest ball was, the farthest ball from the hole, and you have to put all 3 of them in from that spot.
Yeah, I kind of play that game. Even if I lag them up close, I'm going to move them back 4 or 5 feet and finish off the hole.
And it makes you really focused on the fact that you cannot, especially in lag putting, where 3 putts, they're going to happen, but if you can really be able to dial in your speed 3 times in a row, there's just so many things where you can pick up so many shots and just little things. So I'm not sure if I'll write anymore. I think I'll start just putting them on my blog. I started a blog now. It's progolfonly.com. I think I'll just start putting them up for free and seeing and kind of getting an idea of how people react to them before I try to make money off of them.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I've got I'm kind of fascinated with I really haven't created an official blog site. I wrote, as a regional training director for Henry Griffiths, I had to write an article every month to publish in our newsletter. So I had just, you know, 20, 30 articles over the course of a couple years that I had to do. And we alternated, so it wasn't every month, but I was required to write. And so it was a struggle for me. And yet, when I wasn't trying to, all kinds of things came. And I've got all these things and... you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that you're able to articulate your thoughts and about the game and your journey through the game, and people get interested in it. So the most important thing, Mike, is that we let everybody know how to find you officially. Remember, we're going to post. Mike's going to have a website up at Fairways and Greens with this podcast in, with all his contact information, how you can find him. How you can find and follow his blogs. He's very articulate. He's a very good writer. I enjoyed his first book. I'm kind of looking forward to this third one. I've already thumbed through the gambling book, and I think it's a must read. It's real quick. I think it's important. You know, Mike's got something to say, and he's articulate, and he's been around the block in this game. He's worked at every level in the game. He's pursued the tour, and he understands it. And I think I wasn't aware that you had started a blog.
Well, I mean, it's very
early on.
Early stages. I think I have like 4 or 5. You know, a couple of the posts have been. Some of them are really good. One of them, and something that we could probably talk about, I'm not sure if you remember the tournament that they had in Europe, that 6-hole tournament where they implemented a shot clock on one
right,
of the holes.
Right.
I am, you know, one of the reasons why I don't play a whole lot of golf, and I will only play if there's, I mean, it's got to be enough money for me to want to roll out of bed, is because of the slow play issue.
Yes.
I don't have, I mean, when I was, you know, 22 and all I cared about was golf and I could, you know, just sit there and talk with my buddies all the time, you know, I didn't mind playing 5 hour rounds. You know, now, you know, my life's different. I have a lot of other things that I'm connected to. And I think it would be very interesting to see what would happen if they not only implemented a shot clock, but was firm on that shot clock. For all levels, well, for at least the tours, at least, but you know, the big tours, women's, men's, just to see what that would do. And I personally believe that the game would be, they would actually play better.
Some would, for sure. Absolutely.
There are some that would absolutely struggle. Jordan Spieth, Ben Crane, there are some players that just, that can't, that have to be very thorough in their thought process, but it would definitely, when you're talking about losing strokes. I know right now the tour has, you know, like they do a lot of fining, and it's like, if it's really bad, they'll penalize strokes. But I mean, if you're talking a stroke a hole for every time that you take longer than 40 seconds, a player that's deliberate could easily shoot 65 and end up writing down an 80 without too much issue.
I think everybody adapts to the environment. I think the reason some of these they slow down is because they're able to get away with it. And why not? I mean, I think Lydia Ko is one of the slowest players I've seen lately. Agonizingly so slow. You know, I think the tour, if they were smart, they wouldn't sit there and show her going through this process for 5 minutes before she hits a shot. Just pan off and show somebody that's playing, then move back when she's ready to hit the shot. Or don't even move in until she's ready to hit the shot. You know, the problem is when they get on the leaderboard, that's where the action is, and that's what you want to watch. And then you have to watch them go through all this process. And, you know, I agree with you, slow play. I always play better if I can get into a rhythm and just keep moving. And the minute it breaks down, you know, a 5.5 hour round, I'm toast. At the 4.5 hour mark, you can stick a fork in me. It's hard to focus.
And it's not fun.
I can't
imagine, like, anyone, you know,
particularly when it's 106 out and the humidity's up in the monsoon season in August. I just played a round that took 5.5 hours, and unfortunately it really wasn't our group. It was because there was a golf week tournament out in front that they teed off at 8 o'clock. When we got there, our group, we had four groups, we were teeing off at 9:30. Well, I asked the starter, I said, where do you think the last group of the tournament is? And he says, well, we think they're on the fifth or sixth hole. This is an hour and a half into the last group went off at 8:20, and we got there and teed off at 9:30. They were six holes into the match, and so I knew we were in for a long day. And I tried to pace myself. I did, you know, I had my energy drinks. I stayed hydrated. I was eating, you know, and throughout the round. And still, by the fifth, at hour 4:45, I took a triple and a double and blew myself out of the money. And, you know, it was just, it's just not fun. And I get that totally. I love going out at the country club because the play's gone. It's quiet in the afternoon. I can go out and play 18 holes in an hour and 45 minutes by myself and maybe 2.5 hours with a couple guys. And that may be hitting extra shots, you know, and messing around.
Yeah.
Unless there's some money on it. I mean, and even if we were grinding for money, it'd be 2.5 hours at the worst.
Yeah, there's just no reason, you know, it should be there's a lot of things that I'm against, you know, you can call me old fashioned, but I mean, I didn't grow up, I kind of grew up in that era where I knew who Tiger was. I admired who Tiger was, but I like the flashy guys. I like the partiers. I like Floyd and Trevino and
those are the guys I grew up with anyway.
And they took no time.
Nope. I agree with you. I mean, I'm 63. So those are the guys I watched. I mean, when I was a kid on watching television, it was Nicklaus and Player and Trevino and Watkins and Fuzzy and all those guys. You know, it's a different world out there. But it's been programmed into everybody, so it's just part of the thing.
Well, not only that, but you have to think about, they're playing faster and they're playing on worse condition courses and they're still scoring just fine.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, we could probably spend 3 hours.
The rants of
Mike Guillen and the things that he sees wrong with the game. But
write a book about it, man. Write a book about it.
I could. Yeah, I'll have to use some pseudonyms and change some names to keep the libel lawyers off my back.
But, well, you can always just do a fiction novel on slow play.
Oh yeah, but I mean, there are a few things, and it might be a testament to the fact that I'm still single, but I love the game.
Yep.
And I want to see it held to its to the standard that it ought to be held.
Well, as a writer, you have a voice that other people will hear as a writer. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Yeah, and now that I have, you know, I've kind of turned the corner with the book, I have, you know, the two nonfiction books. I have a fiction book. It's like I said, it's currently in the final stages of editing. Mainly, I have a couple friends that are reading through it just to make sure it doesn't bore them to tears. You know, because I can think it's the greatest book in the world, but if the reader doesn't enjoy it, then I go nowhere with it. You know, I think it's a good read. A friend of mine who really knows golf, he gave it a read. He really enjoyed it. So I'm really hoping that it goes. But for my next act, what I'm hoping to do now that I'm back home, I have everything I could ask for here in Phoenix. You know, I've written two books now, about one about playing golf professionally and one about playing golf for money, and those are kind of not mutually exclusive, but now that I've kind of created a body of work here, I really like to put my money where my mouth is and not just write about it from the past tense, but also show that I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm really going to be dedicating the rest of the fall, winter, and spring to, you know, getting back into playing shape. I don't have any aspirations to play on the tour, but if I can go up to you know, play my buddies over at Stallion Mountain, and be able to hold my own with them and be able to play in the pro scratch golf leagues here in Phoenix, and be able to win some money off really good players, that's all I could ask for. But I really want to show that there's a certain system to it, and be able to articulate that in a way that people can understand, and anyone that wants to, you know, go about it, that they can look at my work and see that these principles that I've talked about really do work.
Cool. Well, listen, Mike, it's been nice having you on the show, and I want you to make sure you let everybody know now how they can find your writings and your social media site and your blog site. Let them know.
Okay.
And of course, we'll post all that information on the podcast broadcast page, and we should, Mike, look and probably get your show out here pretty quick, and as soon as it's up, you know, you'll have access to it and get it out there. So get that information get that information out right now.
Alright, so you can find my personal blog is progolfonly.com, and my social media sites, I finally did the smart thing and got all my social media handles aligned. So if it's Facebook, it's facebook.com/MikeGeehanGolf. If it's Instagram, it's instagram.com/MikeGeehanGolf. Twitter handle at MikeGeehanGolf. And Snapchat, MikeGeehanGolf. And the book should be out. It's actually the slated release date is September 29th. So we got 2 weeks from today. I don't know if this is going to make the final cut or not, but if not, I can say something else in place of it.
No, it's
so
fine.
So the book will be out pretty soon, sometime at the beginning of the fall, and I'm looking forward to it. I really hope people engage with it, and if you find the book, feel free to read it. Drop me a line on any of those social media platforms. I'd love to hear from you. Gaylord, it's always a pleasure, man. I know we're still waiting on that round of golf, and hopefully I can be up in Vegas and we can get a little game of ourselves going.
Well, we can always play at the club. We're closed until the 13th of October, but once we open, it's going to be in primo shape for the rest of the season. So,
yeah, I'm kind of hoping to be up there because I know that a few friends are going to want some signed copies up there. So,
yeah,
I'm hoping to be up there. You know, hopefully after the 13th, but before Halloween.
There you go. Well, Mike, it's been great having you on the show, and I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to say goodbye to my guests and. Stay tuned for the next episode. It's been great. This is the Vegas Golf Coach signing off. Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to thegolfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.